Welcome into the final hour of Darren Donick and Chase from here at Pete and Terry's Tavern. Right connected to the Sobro entrance to Bridgestone Arena. We've got a doubleheader coming up a little bit later this afternoon. First game at 3:30, Predators and Panthers to get the preseason started. Our official coverage starts at 3 o'clock. Coming up on the show at 1:30, we'll hear from Mike Vrabel the day after. He's had a chance to regroup, take a look at the film, break some things down, and then a quick turnaround to go down to Jacksonville. So that's coming up at the bottom of the hour. Willie Donick, Chase McKay, we're still awaiting word on Darren McFarland and his status for later today, but we do know.
Does he have a Shake Shack?
I don't think it has to do with shakes this time, which is very surprising.
No.
It's shocking.
No, he is lower body, day-to-day.
To be determined.
The official report.
To be determined.
From tough coaching over the weekend?
Yes. A big battle over the weekend in the hot sun. His team that has transferred now to the travel ball, they got their first couple wins. But Darren, he's banged up. Got an issue. Might have to wheel him out there for the next tournament.
Maybe we'll have to get Bull to give him some clues on how to stay out of injury problems.
Yeah. Well, Pete Weber is here. He'll be on the call this afternoon, and so he'll be busy as we circle the wagons and bring you all of the coverage here on 102.5 The Game. So, Pete, are you ready for the new adventure here? This is something. I was looking at the calendar. I don't know if I'm off on an island here, but I thought there was another week. I don't know why, before they actually start October the 3rd. But it's going to be on us quick. Tuesday,
yes,
a couple more games this week, and then a couple next week, and it's time to go.
That's right. And think of you remember what it was like beforehand, when there was like 8 to 9 preseason games?
Yeah.
In roughly the same span of time. So maybe it's not quite as quick as we think, but age is just getting to us right now. I think that's what's going on.
Well, age will be something to watch for today. A lot of the youngsters that we saw last weekend in the rookie prospect showcase will get a chance to play today. They're kind of splitting them up with some of the veterans today. But in the first game in particular, one guy that really shined, I know in the game that you did, and really all the games in the prospect showcase, was Rem Pitlick.
Yeah.
And he'll be in there in game one this afternoon.
I really enjoyed watching him. There just seems to be a lot more confidence in his game right now than what there was last year. You know, you come in off you finish your college season, then come in, sign your professional contract. I think he is, I'm not going to say cocky, but I think he's confident, and I think he's approaching comfort level.
Yeah.
Another guy we saw, the first-round pick, Philip Tomasino. We were told by Scott Nickel today that Philip Tomasino will be skating on the same line with Rocco Grimaldi. We know Tomasino's big skill that he was drafted on was his speed.
Yes.
We know Grimaldi can really skate as well. And so Scott Nickel says get ready for a real fast line there. He really wants to see the speed come out there. And Grimaldi obviously has a lot to prove.
Rocco has a lot to prove. It was intriguing talking with him about his trip to Toronto for the arbitration.
Yeah.
And all that he went through just to get there for that. And then how long he had to wait for the decision to be rendered. You're talking about sitting on pins and needles. He certainly was that.
It worked out for him, though.
Yes, it did.
It worked out for him.
Yep. And hopefully he will move. But, you know, Pete, one of the things that we're going to see is when you start putting all the names down on a piece of paper and you say, okay, here could be my first line. This could be what they do in the second line. It's clear that they have options that take you to about 17, maybe 18 forwards that you could say, all right,
yep,
I could see this.
Legitimate chance.
Right. And so there's competition for Rocco Grimaldi and some others.
Yes, there is. You know, and the wild card name that comes in, people tend to forget a little bit, though, was the Daniel Carr signing.
Yes. Yeah. And he'll be in the second game tonight, but he'll be a guy that they're going to be taking a close look at. And I think a lot of fans are curious to see what he looks like out there. They've heard a lot about him. He's only practiced a couple of games with the team, but he's going to get a chance to shine here.
After being an MVP last year. Not bad, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to see him in game action later on tonight. In the first game, you know, some names that people are familiar with. We'll see Nick Bonino, Colton Sissons, Austin Watson. We know the success that line has had. I would imagine we'll see them together during points of this game. But we talked to Scott Nickel about this earlier, Pete. I'm curious about the goaltending battle for the third goalie spot for this team with Connor Ingram and Troy Grosnick.
And then see how time is allocated in Milwaukee.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's going to be a very curious thing, too, I think. If they're both perfectly healthy, is it half and half? How will it be split?
I think that's a good point.
And the Applebee kid,
it looks like they're going to Grosnick and Ingram will split the duties likely here in this first game.
Yeah.
But I think that's a good point that that's only the first part of the competition,
right?
It, playing time in Milwaukee and who's playing well, that could lead into who number three is. And Grosnick is the guy that had that job last year, so
right.
I'm sure he's going to want to hold it. But Ingram was one of the stories out of the prospect showcase. He
yes,
played
he
great.
Was. I thought he played very good, and for that matter, so did Appleby.
Appleby had a very good game in the third one. He will play at least dress in the second game with UC Soros. So another guy that's going to play in this first game, Pete, is Steven Santini, who was another guy that I think there's going to be a lot of curiosity.
Yeah.
Can he be in the picture? He was part of the PK Subban package. Jeremy Davies, who was the other defenseman they got, had a great prospect showcase, but Santini, a guy a little older, not eligible. He's played more games at the NHL level, but I think there's a lot. How does he compare to a Yannick Weber, a Matt Irwin, some of the guys who have been in that 5-6 defense hole?
Right. And that might be the one thing to really concentrate on for a lot of people. I know you think about the power play and, you know, is it going to be Duchesne and Johansson 1 and 1A? But I think if you watch who's going to be in those 5, 6, and 7 slots on D. Now, much of the year last season, the Predators carried 8 D.
Yes.
One more than most teams do.
And that'll be a decision. Do they do 8 this year? Do they do 7 and keep an extra forward?
That's going to be one of the big things that I'm watching, because we look at the depth of this organization right now, especially at forward, and Daniel Carr, Eli Tolvanen, and some of these that were brought, others that were brought in, others that have been developing. I think it's a huge question. Do you carry 8D or do you carry the extra forward? Or do we see a fluctuation of that throughout the year?
That's what we saw last year. We did a lot of fluctuating.
Yes. There was definitely some fluctuation. Pete Weber is here with us. And, you know, looking forward to these two games tonight. How do you prep for two games? And I know you're going to have Willie spell you in the second period of each. But
you sleep a lot the night before.
That's what I did last night.
And go over. Wait
I did.
A minute. Thank God I'm sitting down.
I did.
Chase McCabe admits to getting rest.
Look, with this new schedule, moving to the midday show, my sleep pattern is a lot better than it used to be. And I got 11 hours last night because I went to bed at 8:30. I said, I'm done. I got a long day tomorrow. And it was good.
Wow. 11 hours. This is scary. Big.
So I'm going to be all over the place tonight.
Yeah. You're not going to need any coffee, are you?
No. I'm good. I had one. This is all I needed today.
Well, that's like 50 ounces.
Yeah.
That's pretty big.
Yeah.
Pretty big tin you got there.
Another guy that I wanted to ask you about, because I've heard Brent Peterson speak on him a lot over the years, is Yakov Trenin.
Yeah.
He's going to play in game number one. Scott, we talked about him earlier, Willie and I did. But he's somebody that I feel like he's at that point where you want to see exactly what he is. Is he going to you know, be with Milwaukee? Is he going to be able to come up and contribute to this club? So he's somebody I'm watching tonight.
Last few days, and I know we have not had that many days of the guys on the ice, but he's really been sniping.
Yeah.
So can he carry it forward into this?
That's going to be the big part, is can you take what you're doing in practice and doing it in a game? You brought up Jeremy Davies. I ran into Peter Laviolette at Petey's party, and it was the first time that I've seen him, you know, since last season. And I'm like, Coach, how you doing? How is your summer? And I get it was good. You know what? I watched the kids. That Davies kid, he is really, really – and he couldn't stop talking about it.
Yeah.
So that shows you how excited that the coaching staff is about not only him, but some of these youngsters that we're going to see tonight.
Yeah, that's most everybody I talk to pretty excited about watching Davies as well.
For sure.
He's got everybody's attention. So, Pete, we were discussing this. You know how Peter Laviolette likes to get themes, have the group coming together, having the vision, the big picture, those buzzwords he likes to sort of plant early. One thing that I've heard from David Poile, from Peter Laviolette, about sort of enjoying the ride a little bit more, enjoying the process. When you take away all the emotion of losing in the first round, the team did achieve quite a bit last year. They got 100 points. They had more points last year than they had two years ago when they went to the Stanley Cup final.
Yeah.
They won the division title with a late surge. But you wouldn't know that based on a lot of the feelings that have been out there, not just with the team, but because there's certainly a lot of disappointment with the expectations. But it's interesting that that's the way that they're trying to recalibrate here.
Yes.
Going into the season. Enjoy the ride. Enjoy the process a little bit.
Enjoy more. Going through this. Not thinking every time, oh, there's going to be 2 points we should have had, and we're going to be thinking about that in April.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's I would expect to hear that. The other thing I was interested in from a mental standpoint as they start this tonight, and not all the veterans are in there. We'll see a portion of them over the two games here. But will you hear more saying we're turning the page, this is brand new, or will there be a little chip on the shoulder to try to use that frustration, that disappointment, to try to drive them during the season? Because both I've heard teams go either way.
I think that's probably going to be personalized. Some guys need chips. Some guys don't. So try to determine who is whom in that regard. And then chip up some and just tell everybody else to enjoy themselves.
Do you think we will have tonight a first test of a coach's challenge that does not involve offside or goaltender interference? I'm curious if something comes up. In fact, do we have the challenges tonight? Because I know the games are not, there's not enough camera angles.
Or not enough people in Toronto.
Yeah.
the situation.
We don't even have that. But the coaches have to start thinking about that, right?
Yeah, but they can probably borrow Major League Baseball. They still have all the guys in on Park Avenue.
And send the baseball guys
yeah,
to look at it?
Yeah, send to
the
umpires.
That's a good idea.
Yeah.
But do you think we'll see a lot of that in terms of, because so far we haven't had the big call. I know Mike Vrabel was criticized some for not challenging
One
pass interference, but he said, I guarantee you, everything I've been taught, they're not overturning it unless it's clear and obvious.
Right.
So now we have the hand pass, and we have a couple other situations now that you can challenge as a coach, but everybody's going to have to get a feel for it, right?
Absolutely. And plus, there is the debit of taking a penalty for an incorrect, inaccurate challenge.
More of a price to pay.
Yes.
For goaltender interference in particular, that's going to be huge.
Which is still the most nebulous of calls.
Right.
So you're going to almost have to get into the mind of the referee who has to make the final rendering.
All right, Pete, thanks a lot.
You got it.
You're warmed up from your own tavern. Where's Crispy? When's Crispy arriving here?
I think he's going to get here about 3:29.
3:29, okay.
Yeah.
Well, we're looking forward to that, but it's great to have the gang all here in Smashville.
Hail.
And so we will crank it up here. Pete will be on the call at 3:30 with Hal Gill. And, of course, we've got coverage of both games here on Wednesday.
Welcome back from Germany.
Yeah.
Feeling dunk.
We're coming back with more of Darren, Donick, and Chase next here on 102.5 The Game. Taking advantage of the lunch special we've got going on. Jared and the GM will take over at 2. And then our pregame starts at 3 as we bring you the first of 2. We got Let's Play 2 going today, Predators and Panthers.
We know that when Sean Henry was on the show last week, he said Nash was writing notes for kids to get out of school. He said Ryan Johansson would make phone calls for people to be able to leave work early and to come to the game. So, again, pregame coverage at 3. The first game drops the puck around 3:30, and then game number 2 shortly thereafter, the conclusion of game number 1. So it's fun. This is always a cool tradition that the Predators have had over the last few years.
Coming up at 1:30, we'll play you Mike Vrabel live from over at St. Thomas Sports Park as they turn the page on yesterday's disappointment and look ahead to Thursday's quick turnaround as they take on the Jacksonville Jaguars. A couple of news bulletins. Florida coach Dan Mullen has confirmed that his quarterback Felipe Franks is out 6 months and will undergo ankle surgery. Gruesome injury against Kentucky. The kid Trask came in there, got the job done. That was a very intriguing game. In fact, there were a lot of good games for a weekend that did not have a lot of heavyweight matchups. I thought South Carolina played admirably in a lot of ways. I said to myself a lot throughout the day, I was like, how did they lose to North Carolina? But
Arizona State, Herm Edwards.
Good win.
Two in a row over Michigan State.
Yeah, outstanding win for them. That was a huge win for them.
Yeah.
Kentucky, the backup quarterback looks like he's all right.
They should have won that
game. They certainly had a chance to win that game.
I mean, look, I know Darren's not here, but, you know, Darren has seen that his entire life of just almost beating Florida, and then something happens at the end.
On the pro front, the injury news to quarterbacks again in the headlines. Yeah. Ben Roethlisberger is out for the year, elbow surgery. So suddenly, after trading Josh Dobbs, they have Mason Rudolph, and that's it. They got to go find another backup, and they got to ask, can Rudolph do the job? What do they do? That is an unfamiliar situation for the Steelers. And Drew Brees is now out for around 6 weeks, is the timetable throwing out there, with a thumb problem. Saw just the classic. He followed through. He got hit. Yeah. He hit his thumb on the other player's helmet, and he's done. I mean, a guy that those are two guys that just don't miss games.
No,
Roethlisberger and Brees.
No,
they don't miss games.
Look, here's the question on Roethlisberger. I mean, has he played his last game? Could this be it for him? I'm not saying because of injury,
so.
But the questions. It's been that the last few years of, okay, is he retiring? He's thinking about it. Has he got more, you know, a few more runs left in him? Who knows? I'm with you. I think he comes back. I don't think he wants to go out this way, but he's not getting any younger. But and on Brees, yeah, he has not missed. I saw a stat. Let me see if I can pull it up from Adam Schefter that he put out earlier today about Drew Brees that, you know, basically along the lines of that he doesn't miss a lot of time. Drew Brees has missed only one start due to injury since high school when he was ruled out of a Week 3 game at the Carolina Panthers in 2015 with a shoulder injury.
If you're wondering, the Titans do play the Saints, but it's not until December 22nd. So you would figure that, at least for this injury, this is not going to affect that matchup. They have gotten a draw here where they're facing two teams that lost their quarterback in Weeks 2 and 3. Right out of the chute. And so that's why it's so urgent for the Titans to bounce back and not let the opportunity against Jacksonville slip away here. But as we look,
you got to bounce back fast,
I mean,
too.
The odds makers have got that as a dead pick.
Well, and when
which
I told
really
you,
surprises
when
me.
I said I'd give Jacksonville a 1-point favorite, I was like, you know, it could be a pick 'em. So that's not surprising. We'll see where if the money moves it a little bit. But the quick turnaround, I think, is both good because you can put yesterday behind you. You can just wash that away. You have to immediately turn your focus to Jacksonville starting today. But it's also bad, and both teams have to face this because, you know, you don't have time to heal. And so you never know what the little injuries are, you know, guys being banged up 2 weeks into the season. You don't really have time for your body to heal, and that's why the players, you know, are so against the Thursday night games. But then on the flip side, for the following week, you essentially get a bye week this weekend that you have a little extra time before your next game. So they'll have that to try and get some extra rest.
The next game being in Atlanta against the Falcons, and the Falcons showed that when they're on, they're pretty good. They were able to win last night against the Eagles. So that certainly is one where you kind of throw your hands up and say, okay, in the NFL, that's one where – if you play a great game, you can go and win. But if you don't have your act together, you can get smoked.
Yep.
So 2-2 at the end of 4 weeks with three games being on the road, you take that. I think they were in a position to try to get greedy. They should have won the game yesterday. And now you're playing with house money, 2-0 going to those two games. Boy, it's amazing how one game changes your whole outlook. And that can happen on the college front as well. Let's go to Max Hurst. Some news, too, on some upcoming kickoffs as the SEC has released some start times for some games a couple of weeks down the road. Max, what do you got?
Yo, one note, guys, on that Drew Brees injury. So the AFC South and the NFC South are the crossover divisions, like you said. There will be one AFC South team that Drew Brees will miss if he misses the 6 weeks as scheduled. That's the Jaguars in Jacksonville in week six. Mm-hmm. So that's
the
Titans-centric. Yes, for real. And it's interesting to see that AFC-NFC matchup in Week 16, but that's what the Titans have. All right, so we got TV times for two Saturdays from now. We already had the times for this weekend. The SEC announces them 2 weeks in advance, 12 days in advance. Not a lot of games either. Only local game is Vanderbilt. They'll be hosting Northern Illinois. That game will be at 11 a.m. here in Nashville on the SEC Network. So probably about what you'd expect for Vanderbilt there. Some conference games, A&M and Arkansas will be playing at Cowboys Stadium, AT&T Stadium. That's also at 11 in the morning. Ole Miss and Alabama is the 2:30 CBS game. Florida is out of conference, playing an FCS opponent, Towson. I believe they're Colonial Athletic, coming down from Maryland. That's 3 o'clock on the SEC Network.
I know
Network.
Where Towson is.
Yes.
I don't know what conference they're in. Football, for sure.
I think CAA for most sports. But, yeah, football may be different. You may be right. And then the two night games, a couple of conference games. This is all on Saturday, September the 28th. Mississippi State at Auburn, 6 Central on ESPN. And Kentucky at South Carolina, 6:30 on the SEC Network in Columbia. Bye weeks that week. LSU is off after coming to Vandy. Then Missouri, Tennessee, and Georgia all do not play. So only 6 SEC games. 2 of them are non-conference games. Vanderbilt versus Northern Illinois, September 28th, 11 in the morning.
This weekend, Vanderbilt is around a 3-touchdown underdog at home against LSU. Florida is a 2-touchdown favorite over Tennessee in the Swamp as they count down to that, even with the backup quarterback. And in all honesty, it didn't look like they dropped off much with Trask. Just much like South Carolina, it looks like they're going to be okay losing their guy. I liked how do you say his name, the South Carolina freshman? I thought
Helinski.
Helinski. I thought played. He had his moments of going up against the best, right?
He had the lucky socks. Who gave him the socks? Was it Jake Bentley?
Good question.
He was wearing somebody else's socks for the game. I saw on Twitter. So
each team dealing with the quarterback issues there, but so far, at least it doesn't look like there's a major problem losing the starter. Same thing with Kentucky's guy.
Yeah.
I thought he gave him a chance.
I'll put it to you like this. If you're a starting quarterback in the SEC or the NFL and you're not hurt right now, go ahead and get some bubble wrap.
Yeah, and I think every team that has not experienced that is sitting there going, are we okay if we get caught by this little epidemic that's hitting?
And that's why having Ryan Tannehill for the Tennessee Titans is so important.
No question. When we come back, Mike Vrabel from over at St. Thomas Sports Park will carry his press conference live. Stay tuned. This is 102.5 The Game. Back here at Pete and Terry's Tavern, counting down to a doubleheader action here on 102.5 The Game. Predators and Panthers, our coverage starts at 3 o'clock. Jared and the GM take over at 2. In just a moment, we'll send it over and hear Mike Vrabel's press conference live. In the meantime, NFL fans, don't miss Nashville's best NFL pregame show. NFL pregame will be live from George Jones downtown on 2nd Avenue Thursday night before the Jags game from 5 to 7. Jared Stillman, Floyd Reese, Chris Sanders, brought to you by Wholesale Inc., powered by RumbleOn.com, Kubota Tractors, Middle Tennessee Kubota Dealers, and Boomba's Craft Pizza and Tap House. So this, Chase, could be a pretty interesting press conference.
I would think so. I'm sure there are some questions that Mike Vrabel is going to be asked that he won't necessarily want to answer, but that is a part of being the head coach in of an NFL team when you basically give one away. So I'm curious to hear what he has to say and what the media asks him.
Are we ready to go, Max?
Still waiting.
Still waiting.
We're in a
holding pattern.
Hey,
when you say give it away, it's interesting because they didn't turn the ball over. That's what's interesting to me is it's a game where I say they sort of left it on the table. They didn't go get the game. The Colts' game plan was clearly, let's make them come win the game.
Yeah.
We're not going to do anything to lose the game. And it worked on the road where I don't know if I would say the Titans played not to lose, but they missed their chance to go get the game. They had plenty of chances to do it. With that, let's go over and listen to Mike Vrabel.
You feel like it hasn't developed in time? Then we got to try to check it down or throw it away. I mean, there's a lot of things that go into negative plays on offense. And you know, we're going to try to fix those as quickly as possible with the short week, the details that we hit yesterday, the ones that we were able to, work on throughout the week, and maybe it wasn't great on Wednesday, but by Saturday when we walked through it, there were a few instances where I was able to show the team that, hey, we didn't hit this on Wednesday, but we were able to pick up this pressure and this run, and we gained, 12 or 15 yards on it. So those details are going to have to happen quicker this week.
Do you have to find a way to push the ball downfield?
I think that we have to find a way to just to be more efficient. And I think that when we are able to convert third downs, those bring up a lot more opportunities for every player on offense. Every guy that plays offense, with the exception of the offensive line, minus Quisenberry, wants to be able to be productive. They want to catch passes. They want to run the football. They want to gain yards. They want to score touchdowns. Like, that's what they want to do, and that's what we want to do. And when you don't convert on third down, that limits those opportunities. And that's exactly the message I told the team just a few short minutes ago, was that when we cannot be in third and long and we can be in third manageable and pick up those third downs, then we can run it with whoever and we can throw it to whoever, as opposed to running out of opportunities by not converting.
How much do you feel like your third down problems are a result of first or second down?
Well, when
problems?
13 of the 20 are third and 10 plus, that's tough sledding. And that would be being efficient on first and second and being more consistent on first and second to bring up those opportunities that, when they arise, aren't third and 11 and they're third and, you know, 3 to 5.
Can you explain the fourth down play when you have them at the line trying to draw the other team off sides, the clock's ticking, everybody's looking at you? What are you telling them? What is Arthur saying to Marcus?
Yeah, he's saying that we're going to take the delay at that point in time. And then understand, we touched on this last night. There's, you know, the clock gets under 15 seconds. You know, we want to try to, you know, do something to get them off sides. I made a decision to punt, but I also wanted to keep, you know, I knew that the timeouts was critical. Needing a field goal at that instance to win the football game, I felt confident that we were going to have another opportunity to get the ball back with a chance to win with a field goal. And then that's why we made the decision that I made.
So the 40 seconds at that point you thought didn't matter based on
No, I didn't, just because as long as we had the three timeouts was my thought process.
But when you fake early there, then for the team to be standing there looking at the sideline, that's
just kind of where, you know, I didn't want to rush Brent out there. I didn't want to rush the punt team out there. I knew with three timeouts that I felt comfortable that we would be able to punt the ball, get a stop, and get the ball back with an opportunity to go win the football game.
What's Marcus being told when he's approaching the line on the third and two for this play?
You know, at the end of the day, we were in a down clock situation with 15 seconds left, and we didn't hit it. And that was something that, you know, you'd like to have back. I'd like to have a lot of plays back. But we're going to have another situation like that during the season. I'm confident in it. And it's, and we're going to be able to hit it next time.
With that emphasis on third downs, Adam Humphries, he was brought in to be that mm-hmm. guy. How can you guys get him more involved and take advantage of his ability?
Well, just continue to, you know, because when, you know, Adam's strength is working underneath. And Adam's, you know, continuing to work and get open. And when you have those longer downs and distances, you know, you have to push the ball further down the field. And you know, we would like it to be, like we said, third and medium, to where now when he does work underneath and get open in zone or beat somebody in man, he's able to catch it and to get the first down at that point in time, as opposed to needing third and 11.
Now, Marcus said that on some of those sacks, he needs to be able to find Humphries. I mean, did you see that same thing yesterday?
Or find somebody. I mean, if that's how Marcus feels. I mean, I think that, again, it's going to be a total process of being able to trust the pocket when it's there, when it's not there, knowing when you can use your legs and get out of there, and then when you can check it down.
Is there a moment of hesitation sometimes with Marcus? Like, it seems like he goes through, you know, looks for a couple receivers and then almost seems to freeze sometimes. Do you see?
Well, I think that the biggest thing that we do is we're decisive in our actions at every position, coaches included.
Does Tajay need to just go down at the sticks right there rather than trying to make a move for extra yardage and losing the first down?
You know, not to sound redundant from last night, because I know that this was brought up and my response and my answer is not going to change, that we're all dealt through the course of the game situations that come up, and that we have to try to do a great job of teaching and coaching those situations that when they come up, whether that be, you know, our decisions as a coaching staff or a player being put in a situation to make split-second decision. So we'll continue to try to do that to make sure that, you know, we're giving ourselves the best chance to win.
Isn't the split-second decision on a play where you need a first down and you're at the sticks more obvious than some other split-second decision?
I think they all are, again, split-second decisions that, you know, we have to continue to coach and we have to continue to execute on the field, knowing what the situation is, knowing the detail of the play, the detail of the route, where I'm at when I catch it, what we need, all those things that go into being successful.
Is that particular play, coach, to just fall forward if you're, you know, you're running to the sticks on a third and 10 and fall forward if you're there?
Is the coaching point? Is that what you said? I didn't hear you at first. It's to get the first down, you know, and I think that, you know, again, there's probably times where a catch and run opportunity has led to first downs. And again, putting your, you know, catching the ball and getting vertical and getting 10 and a half when you need 10 would be just as good as, you know, getting 15 or 16.
Derek had 15 carries yesterday. You feel, is that enough, you feel like, or does he need more?
No, I mean, I'm going to go back and I'm going to sound repetitive, but I don't want to do this. We just, if we can do better on third down, then it's 20 carries or it's 21 carries and then it's more catches. And so when you have 2 minute and you have third down, again, if we can just improve the sustainability of these drives, then we can get the ball to a lot of guys that, you know, maybe yesterday we weren't able to, you know, consistently.
He's been awfully more productive than Deion, and they have the same snap count. Is that your goal, to keep those guys relatively even?
Well, when you look at what those snap counts are, like I mentioned with the third downs and the 2 minute. I think that's where a lot of it comes. Deion spells them a little bit on first and second down, but I would say that, you know, if you looked at the first and second down snaps, where we feel like that's Derek's strength, he would have the majority of those snaps.
Like you've done in run defense, and how quickly you maybe need to get some things fixed at the Jacksonville.
What I told the team was 31 carries for 115 yards. It isn't a bad day in the National Football League. But 32 carries for 170 or 65 yards is a bad day. And so it's similar to last year's, where we're headed or where we are, is that it can be really good. And then, you know, you give up a couple long ones or one real long one, that hurts you.
In a situation where the clock is stopped in a 2 minute drill, how far ahead is the offense planning for certain situations? Like if you get a completed pass inbounds, to what the next play is?
Yep, I think we're always doing that. I think that when you go out there and we practice it and we go into the game, it's, you know, 107, need a field goal. We know it's, you know, in this case yesterday we thought it was the 40-yard line where we could reasonably, you know, put our foot on a kick. And so we're talking about those things. We're talking about, you know, after a gain, how long will it take to get the lineman up there? Do we want to run a play? Do we want to clock it? You know, so those conversations are going on before the situation and then, you know, as they're occurring.
If you're taking the timeout before the two-minute warning anyway, even if you don't think there's any hope of them altering the spot, why not challenge the spot?
The process on those, I've learned, is that when the DPI, for example, they are really not going to make a habit of even looking to pick those up. And that would be the first one. And again, it's not what we see on the field. It's what they can reasonably see on replay. It's not what we see with our eyes. It's what the what New York sees on a review. And then the challenges, I would say, on spots are even harder to get overturned. If you looked at history and having been through it, when you looked at the replay, if you don't see the football, there's zero chance of that thing getting overturned, because he's going to say that we can't see the football and there's not clear and obvious visual evidence that's not the spot. And they're going to go with what's on the field.
Short week is always difficult on these guys. Coming off the hottest game ever, Nissan Stadium, does it change how you handle them at all?
Our approach is going to try to be to do everything we can to get them physically and mentally ready for Thursday at 8:20. You know, we played an emotional, physical, hot game. The Jaguars played an emotional, physical game on the road. So, you know, we have to start our preparation now to become mentally and physically ready to play Thursday at 8:20.
You guys were really good in these short or interesting weeks last year. What do you carry over from that, and what do you try to keep for them to do that?
Yeah, I mean, the schedule. I mean, I think we try to, you know, get them some rest today, bring them in later. You know, walkthroughs. You know, we're not going to be able to practice. Trying to get some more sleep and recovery, hydration. You know, all those types of things that we tried to do last year.
You feel like Marcus had a good pocket presence in this game?
You know, I think at times there were some examples that it was good. It was what we were looking for. I think there were times where, you know, the protection wasn't what we were looking for. And then I think at times there were a pocket and, you know, we probably got out of there too soon.
What's been your evaluation of Roger Saffold through the first 2 weeks?
Tough, physical, helped us out, got on a track on some runs, really helped us out, pushed the pile, knocking guys off the ball. And then, you know, yesterday, yeah, I think he got beat one time on a pass rush, guy beat him across his face. So, you know, just try to fix that and correct that. But you know, I think he's been very good in the run game that we've asked him to do. And then, you know, try to just not have the, you know, guy beat you across your face.
Are there things that Marcus can do to prevent those QB pressures from becoming QB sacks?
Yeah, there's always a lot of things. I mean, I think we just talked about it. We just discussed being able to scramble when you have to scramble and know when you have to get out of there. Check the ball down when you have to, or throw it away when you have to.
What's he like in the film room going through these critiques with him? You know, different guys handle stuff different ways.
Everybody's professional. I mean, everybody's disappointed that we lost. Everybody, you know, it's hard to have a quick turnaround and then try to get ready for another game. But that's where we're at, and, you know, we all have to stay, you know, professional and try to take the coaching and, like I said, get these details fixed and corrected without the luxury of a couple extra days.
What's a physical challenge in the turnaround? I'm playing again in 3 days, and you feel like you can get everybody back that played Sunday from them?
Well, maybe. I mean, we'll have some guys that would be on the injury report today that would not have practiced if today was a practice. I guess that's kind of how we put the injury report out. If we were to practice, which, you know, it'll just be a walkthrough. So, you know, it's a physical sport. It's, you know, it's something that is unique, but, you know, we understand the challenge of trying to get guys turned around in just a few days.
That's Mike Vrabel. As the Titans get ready for a quick turnaround on Thursday, when we come back, Chase and I will give you a summary of what we just heard, a couple of bullet points that we think are important going forward here. Stay tuned. We're coming at you from Pete and Terry's Tavern. We're counting down to the opener of the preseason for the Nashville Predators. Stay tuned.